allow us to reintroduce ourselves. I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Today is part two of our Take Two revisit of Jay-Z. Last week, we dug into Jay's 1996 album, Reasonable Doubt. And today, we jump forward to 2003 and L'Album Noir, the Black Album.
Now tuned into the motherfucking greatest. Turn the music up in the headphones. Tim, you can go and brush your shoulder off, nigga. I got you. If you feeling like a pimp, nigga, go and brush your shoulders off. Ladies is pimps too, go and brush your shoulders off. Niggas is crazy, baby.
When Jay-Z announced to the world that he'd be retiring after releasing the Black Album, many of us just assumed, really, dude? But whatever we might have believed from him at the time, it certainly set the stage for how the album would be received. After all, if this was going to be Jay's last ride with us, how would he do it? Well, for one, he assembled a murderer's row of producers to back him, including Rick Rubin, Just Blaze, Kanye West, Ninth Wonder, DJ Quick, The Neptunes, even Eminem. However, unlike the bloated and less than critically lauded double album, The Blueprint 2.0, the Black Album was meant to be lean, 13 songs plus an intro, all killer, no filler. But those formal qualities aside, what made the Black Album special is that whether or not Jay knew that his retirement would only be temporary, it sounded like he really wanted to make some statements on his way out the door. It would create, as we will discuss later, what I think is his last unqualifiably great classic in terms of how much of his talent and passion he poured into it. And it's certainly strewn with some of the best songs of his career. 99 Problems, December 4th, Dirt Off Your Shoulders, and the irresistibly hype public service announcement. If this really was how Jay was going to go out, he left it all out there on the court for us, and we were made all the richer for it.
Now tuned into the motherfucking greatest.
I have to confess, this is my last favorite Jay-Z album, if that makes any sense at all. Which is to say, I thought, you know, Blueprint 3 had some jams on it. 444 was better than I certainly expected. But the Black Album was the last Jay-Z album where I really felt, man, Jay is just so good on top of his game. I don't know if I ever had that same feeling after this album. Where does it rank for you, Morgan?
It's my favorite. I think my favorite three are Reasonable Doubt, Blueprint, and this one. And
same.
And this one's my favorite out of the three.
Why? What makes this a heat rock for you?
So as we were saying on Reasonable Doubt, I think with Reasonable Doubt established his brand, and I think the Black Album secured his brand. By this time, he's gone from chairman of the board to king of the castle. He is major, major, major. And I love the swagger and confidence that comes with at this point in your career and your life being major. I love albums that have drama circulating around them. And the drama circulating around this is his retirement, right? So I love that he is just like, if this is your swan song, he swings for the fences. I love the authority of this album. I love the royalty of this album. And I love Just Blaze. I love Just Blaze's production on this album. Yeah. This is just, it's just big, for lack of a better adjective. It's a big ass album. It's just him in his bag, period.
Right. We will get into later on whether or not him making or cutting a retirement album was a great idea in hindsight. But I will say that to the extent that you might have believed, and I don't think a lot of us really believed that he was retiring, but even the framing of it, right? If his idea was to plant in our head the idea that, all right, this is the last time we're really going to get to sit with the Jay-Z album, I remember very distinctly feeling like, well, at least you went out on top, which was supposed to be the whole idea of it, right? This is like Jordan walking away after that sixth ring, and we don't have to think about the wizard years for him, right? This is the equivalent to that. And it's funny because I mentioned in that last episode about Reasonable Doubt about how just listening to a couple of songs on there really takes me back to a really great time in my personal professional life. And the Black Album is the same way, which it didn't even occur to me until now to realize that I can really think about different eras in my own life around when certain Jay-Z albums came out, which says a lot about the power of music, and in particular these albums to take me back to those points in time. But, you know, 2000, this was what, 2003, right? So I was in the first year of a new relationship, which has now turned into the person that I'm married to. At this point, as a writer, I was getting to write cover stories for a variety of music magazines, so I was doing very well there. I was editing a book about hip-hop album reviews, which I'm going to come back to later. My audio blog, Soul Sides, was just about to get started, and I was finally nearing the end of graduate school. And all of this is happening in this era of hip-hop that was, I think, so dynamic and so rich, because this is when, I mean, mixtapes were huge at this point, right? You know, internet message boards, because this is the era before Facebook, before Twitter, all that stuff. So that was a main meeting point for people to get together to talk and debate all things hip hop. And so I just feel like hip hop, and God, I don't want this to sound like I have these rose tinted glasses on, but there was still something about the rap music industry and hip hop in general that felt very unpredictable. But while I don't necessarily love the Black Album as a complete front to back listen, and we'll talk more about this as well, I do love how so much of this LP takes me back to this really great moment, you know, in my life and what I perceive as being in, and also in hip hop's evolution in the early 2000s. I just have these great memories of, you know, one of my good friends is Hua Su, who is now a staff writer at the New Yorker. And I feel like we had gotten onto, you know, IM, like AOL instant messaging with one another, listening to this album at the same time, and both of us being completely blown away by December 4th, which is one of the first songs to kick off the LP, and just being like, oh my God, Jay did it.
They say they never really miss you till you dead or you gone. So on that note, I'm leaving after the song. So you ain't gotta feel no way about Jay so long. But at least let me tell you why I'm this way. Hold on. I was conceived by Gloria Carter and Agnes Reeves, who made love under the sycamore tree, which makes me a more sicker MC.
In 2003, I remember I had another Explorer that had great sounds, like great, great speakers, way better than what I have now. And I remember the feeling of bumping this album. And I think I might have started with What More Can I Say. I think that's the song that I started with. And I remember thinking, this album is a thumper. This album is, you know, when I use the phrase bump or bumping, it means different things. Bumping, you know, as an activity, you're bumping something. Bumping something is great. Or bumping as in the sound of this album in my car on these speakers. From 1996 from Reasonable Doubt to this point, he released an album every year. And by the time we get here, he is super established. And he's also started a clothing company. He's so large. And this was my experience with the album. It wasn't just experiencing the bigness of this album. It's experiencing Jay-Z and who he is at the time of this album. So this album is fantastic to me. And he is at his, he at that time, and I didn't know there was much, he would get much, much bigger and much, much richer. But at that time, he's one of the biggest stars in the game.
Oh, absolutely. And much as we did with Reasonable Doubt, looking at that album in the context of what else was around it in 96, I think if you do the same thing for 2003, you really realize that how rarefied in terms of stature Jay-Z was at, because who was really all that comparable to him at all? So 03, I mean, some of the other big, big albums from that year, 50 Cent with Get Rich or Die Trying, which is another massive debut. And in a lot of ways, you could argue that 50 won the year because of the commercial success of that. You had, I think, on a little bit more underground level, you had someone like Freeway out of Philadelphia with Philadelphia Freeway. There's going to be a lot of New York cats who were Dipset aficionados who will point out that the Diplomats, Diplomatic Immunity came out that year. And you have Gangstar with what would end up being their, I guess now their second to last album, but for a long time, we just thought this ended up being their last album, which was The Owners. T.I., you know, rising out of Atlanta with trap music. The Neptunes had Clones. And speaking of the South, you got Ludacris with Chicken and Beer. And then, of course, Outkast brings you the double fist pump of Speaker Box with The Love Below.
Oh, yes.
And I think, I mean, off of that list, just speaking for myself, the only album that is in the conversation as being as good as the Black Album is that Outkast album, which is very different in a lot of ways. And obviously people can go back and listen to our conversation about Speaker Box and The Love Below, because we get into some of those things. But I mean, the Black Album, Jay-Z, that was, I mean, such a banner year for Jay, despite the fact that you have all this other great music happening around it. Place in heaven to the next time we meet forever. God for granting me this moment of clarity, this moment of honesty. The world will fill my trunk, hard knock lifetime, a gift and a curse. I gave you volume at the volume of my words so you could feel my truths. I built the dynasty by being one of the realest. Also, before I forget, because I talked about the quality of production on Reasonable Doubt, I think Black Album is another great example, especially as a snapshot of who the leading producers were in 03, because, you know, Jay is able to get everyone on here from Rick Rubin to Timbaland to the Neptunes to Just Blaze to Kanye West. I don't know if this is necessarily the best Jay-Z album in terms of production. I think the Blueprint from 2001 was probably a little bit better, but you can't question the assemblage of talent in terms of just the all-star crew that he had. And I was reading a kind of a making of story that the Fader published about the Black Album and didn't realize that originally Dr. Dre and DJ Premier were also supposed to contribute tracks, but the timing didn't work out. So, I mean, God, if you can imagine what this album would have sounded like, it's as good as it is now. You know, imagine if Dre and Primo had contributed tracks too. It would have just been, you know, an all-timer in that respect.
I mean, it is very much like an all-star team. Like you have all the, it's like the all-star game. Where you just be like, there's so many stars on here. I mean, this is like you got Yeezy, you got the Neptunes, you got Timbaland, you got Rick Rubin, you got DJ Quick on here. You
just Eminem. Eminem's producing, you know.
Eminem. So he comes into the game with some heavy hitters on it, and it feels like this album. You mentioned Farewell Tour, but this album sort of feels like that last big concert that you give. It's got all the crowd noise and all that atmospheric sound. It just feels big. I'm going to keep saying that, but it feels like a very big album and one that's appropriate for this status and his status. And one thing I wanted to say before we get away from this is he steps away before really the advent of social media. So this is a self-made man that steps away right before careers become made on social media. He sells all these albums and builds all this wealth right before people stop buying albums, right before streaming becomes. So, I mean, and I thought this was as big as it could get. I couldn't even see how his fortune would grow. But not only did he step away on top, but he stepped away right before the industry changed. And I don't know if that's just foresight or a happy accident or whatever. But that's, to me, what adds to him being iconic was his timing. And everything is about timing. And this album came out. Maybe his retirement was ill-timed, but this album came out right on time. All things must come to an end. It is an inevitable part of the cycle of existence. All things must conclude. Take the analogy of the tree that grows in Brooklyn, among the steel and concrete, with all its glorious branches and leaves. One day you too will pass on its legacy through the seeds that drop to the ground.
One of the things our producer Christian asked us before we started taping was whether, you know, when did Jay's reign on the top effectively end? And not necessarily in terms of his commercial success, because as we all know, I mean, that continued on for many years afterwards, but more to do, I think, if I understood his question, more to do with his stature, right? And to me, you know, that question, my answer to that question is, for me at least, I feel like it is the Black Album. And this is something I was alluding to earlier. Because to step away from the game, and I think Kingdom Come, which was his comeback album, wasn't for another, was it two? Actually, no, 3 years. I think that came out in 2006, which in pop music years, I mean, might as well be a full decade. And again, I'm not saying that he didn't make great albums or great songs afterwards. And obviously, he's become more successful than we could have even imagined back in 2003. But I do feel like, you know, when you say that you're going to retire and you want to go out on top, it actually, to me, is really hard to come back from that. And again, you know, I was using the analogy earlier about thinking about Michael Jordan leaving the Bulls after his sixth ring. You know, he retires for a bit and then comes back and plays for the Wizards. And we don't like to think about that part of it. And I think Jay aged a little bit more gracefully into the back half of his career. But I do think the point at which we stop thinking about him as being like best rapper alive, that kind of status, to me, the Black Album marks the last point in which that claim to the title is relatively undisputed, even though I'm sure a lot of 50 Cent fans would disagree from that same year. But I think his albums later than that, even if the ones that sold, you know, really well, like the Blueprint 3, for example, or Watch the Throne, right? The duet album he does with Kanye, as good as they were in their own particular ways, to me, what he symbolized had changed because he no longer was the rag. This is something I was alluding to. I mentioned in the first episode last week. At this point, he's no longer a rags to riches story. It's just all about the riches at this point.
And to me, at this point, he has nothing to prove. And the people that are watching the throne, that are watching him rise to the throne, now we're checking for other people. And to me, we're checking for other methods of making it in this game. And I don't know that those models, to me, are as prolific as his whole story. And at this point in his career, to me, he didn't have anything else to prove. He had done it all. And sometimes when people have done it all and they come back, what they come back with is not as impressive. And I'm talking specifically about, and Brett Favre didn't retire, but I was pretty mad that he just didn't end with Green Bay. I was mad at the Minnesota Vikings. I was mad at the Jets. I was like, yo, you could have just left on that last pick, right? Pick six.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And to your point about Michael Jordan and the Wizards, to me, he had nothing else to prove. And so I just feel like, if he had stopped here, that would have been fine with me. And when Watch the Throne, Kingdom Come came out, I think that was on the strength of Show Me What You Got. And that was where I stayed on that album. I didn't really do any deep diving into that album. That was just that to me was the only jam. But his stature had changed, the game had changed, and he didn't have anything else to prove to me. I still think he was relevant then because he's an elder statesman. He was an OG. He started it.
I mentioned earlier, I thought that the Black Album might have been album number five or six, and I'm totally off. It was album number eight, which makes sense in terms of if he was going to pick a time to retire. I mean, most artists don't get to see like their second album, let alone eight deep into a catalog, let alone with that eighth album being arguably the capstone to your career up until that point, at least. Not to get too far off topic here, but in terms of the albums that have come out since the Black Album, and I'll just run this down for you to remind you. So we have Kingdom Come, right? That's 06. American Gangster, the sort of soundtrack album, comes out the year after that. The Blueprint 3 comes out in 09. We get Magna Carta, Holy Grail in 2013. And then the most recent one being 444, which came out in 2017. So out of those five albums since then, Morgan, do you have a favorite off of that list?
I want to say this. I feel like the albums afterwards, they may not have been intended to be this way, but they feel like concept albums. And of those that I think feel like concept albums, I'd have to say 444.
Mm.
And I say that because as I say all the time, confession is good for the soul.
Yeah, and that is one long confessional album.
That's it.
Yeah.
What about you?
My initial impulse was also to say 444, but I wanted to check myself on recency bias because, I mean, it is the most recent album and it's the one that I've listened to most recently as a result. I mean, I was looking quickly at the track listing for Blueprint 3, and I mean, obviously that's got some big, big heavy hitters on there. You know, Empire State of Mind, obviously, but also, you know, DOA, Death of Autotune, that caused a stir. I liked how that album was... I want to say that was the first album that him and No ID did a lot of a production MC partnership on. But looking also through this track list, there's a lot of songs on here that if you were to, I would not be able to identify if you played it for me to save my life right now. So it probably means I didn't actually like a lot of it. So I don't know, I guess 444, and I think you make some great observations about it being a concept album, it being a confessional LP. So I think it's pretty strong, and it's also just a better album than I think a lot of people expected to hear from Jay-Z circa 2017. None of those albums, those five albums since the Black Album, I think to me remotely come close to how good the Black Album is. You know, the surprisingly good is kind of damning with faint praise in a certain way. Whereas the Black Album was just good, good. I mean, there's no qualifier needed.
You know the type, loud as a motorbike, but wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight. And only thing that's gonna happen is I'ma get the clapping, and he and his boys gonna be yapping to the captain.
We will be back with our conversation, our take two conversation about Jay-Z's The Black Album after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal. And all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome. All right. That's enough of that.
We got this.
Hi. Are you someone who thinks that when one door closes, another one opens?
Someone who always sees the light at the end of the tunnel?
If you answered yes to one or both of these questions, good for you.
We are not those people.
Nope. I'm Annabelle Gurwitch, and I'm a, you know that other door opening? It probably leads to a broom closet kind of person.
And I'm Laura House. When I see a light at the end of a tunnel, I assume it's a train headed right toward me.
Laura and I have created a brand new podcast for people like us. It's called Tiny Victories. We're sharing personal tiny victories or things we've read or seen that inspire resilience.
So if you're looking for a tiny reason to get out of bed each week, subscribe to Tiny Victories.
Available on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get tiny.
And we are back on Heat Rocks, and this part of Take Two, we're talking about Jay-Z's The Black Album.
So let's get into the fire tracks off of this LP. Morgan Rhodes, what sets you aflame?
Encore.
Mm.
Encore is the one, okay, for the following reasons. The horns. Horns. Like, let's just do a whole show on horns, okay? That crowd noise in the back, as I said earlier, sounds like a live album. You're at the most hyped Jay-Z concert, his retirement show, Madison Square Garden, packed three times over. The drums, the drama of it, and the swag. And I think the opening bar, who you know fresher than Hov, riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lyrically at. What?
Now what the hell are you waiting for? After me, there should be no more. So for one last time, nigga, make some noise. Who you know fresher than Hov? Riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking at. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. Yeah, hear me rap, it's like hand G rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O., rap's Grateful Dead. Back to take over the...
Come on. Mm. He is killing. Confident. At the top of his game.
Fire.
Fire.
Oh, I mean, there's no contestation here. This album has a lot of great tracks, but in terms of fire jams, fire tracks, it is all about PSA.
Oh, yes.
Jay and Just at the pinnacle of their collaborations together. Even now, almost 20 years later, listening to this song makes me want to go out and start breaking things like I'm Beyonce in the Hold Up video. And look, Jay has obviously worked with some of the best producers of all time over the years, right? We talked about this last week. You know, he's got Ski, Clark Kent, Premier. In this era, he shifted to working with Kanye and No ID. But I think I speak for a lot of folks when I say that Jay and Just Blaze in the early 00s were an unbeatable duo, right? The modern equivalent of a Guru and Premier or Marley Marl and Big Daddy Kane from earliest eras, which is to say that if you know these two guys are working together, guaranteed hypeness. And I did not realize that PSA wasn't even supposed to be on the album. The story behind this is that they were already mixing down the Black Album when Just Blaze's friend, Big Jack, came through with the original sample, which is from a 1960s early psych rock album. And this is Just Blaze describing what happened next. This is from a 2013 Making of the Black Album documentary segment.
One of my best friends by the name of Big Jack comes in the studio. Y'all got something you gotta hear. Put the headphones on, he puts this record on, and all you heard was dun, 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 dun. I'm just sitting there like, what is about to happen? engineer freaks out. He turns around and he's like, yo, what's going on? And I'm like, listen, keep doing what you're doing. So I made the PSA beat in the headphones while the engineer was mixing whatever record we were working on.
In terms of just in the history of just well-sampled songs or letting a sample just do its thing, I mean, PSA's got to be in my top 10. I mean, this song is, it's so, oh my God, it is so hype. If people will indulge a brief diversion, I mean, if you've been listening to Heat Rocks long enough, you know I do a lot of these brief diversions. Maybe they're not that brief. I would like to be able to say that I am inadvertently, and I do emphasize the inadvertent part, but I'm inadvertently responsible for part of this song, specifically in the second verse where Jay rhymes about how I'm like Che Guevara with bling on.
Bling ain't lie. I done came through the block and everything that's fly. I'm like Che Guevara with bling on. I'm complex. I never claim to have wings on. Nigga, I get my by any means on.
So the story behind this is, in 2013, I created and edited a anthology of hip-hop album reviews called Classic Material. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. And one of my writers, really, really talented, a writer by the name of Elizabeth Mendez Berry, had written an entry about Jay-Z, and I forget which albums that she wrote about in there, but by coincidence, Elizabeth had been assigned to write a profile of Jay-Z that happened to be during the making of the Black Album. And so during the course of her conversations, her interviews with Jay, she had mentioned that she had written this review for my book, and Jay asked to read it. And one of the things that Elizabeth noted in her review was about Jay-Z's contradictory image. And specifically, she referenced in the review this point about how he's a rapper who is willing to wear a Che Guevara t-shirt but then has iced out chains over it. And it must have been around the time that Jay had decided to do this impromptu taping of PSA, because he went and folded in that observation into the line of the song. And Elizabeth didn't tell me about this until a little bit after, well after PSA had already become my favorite track off the LP, did I learn about the history of that line and how it was in response to something that Elizabeth had written for this book that I had edited. So I will take what little credit I can. I mean, it's not like I'm responsible, except for the fact that I created the venue by which this all came through. But I love knowing every time I hear that line, I'm like, that comes from my Classic Material book. That was in response to that. So, yeah.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the R-O-C. Ho, fresh out the frying pan into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier.
It's just so swaggery. Allow me to introduce myself. And I think if there's been a couple of unauthorized documentaries about Jay-Z's life, right? There's been a couple, one in 2011. But if there ever is like a legit big huge documentary or a biopic, they gotta open with that song. They got whoever the music supervisor is, you got to start. That has to be, you got to open there. I hope I'm not giving nothing away. Somebody's listening to Rudy Chung or Kier right now is like, write that down. But yo, I'm just playing. But it just has that track to me feels like a short film, well music supervised. It is the perfect song to encapsulate Jay-Z, his brand, his life, his bag. That one's it. That one's fire.
Yeah. And just the way that he opens, to go back to that, allow me to reintroduce myself part. I mean, that is also my favorite moment off of the entire LP, because it's just such a great opening line. And then the beat drops in perfectly on time to just light everything up. And this is Jess Blaze again from that 2003 documentary talking about how quickly people, fans, oriented themselves around this very song.
So yeah, scrap looking at my S-Dots, put that on, and then two or three weeks later, we're at the Garden, and the entire arena knows the words.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is O-O-H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z.
I feel like Jay should become a sponsor for some kind of cleaning detergent, and he could just reuse that line. probably not going to happen. He doesn't need the money at this point.
He doesn't
shilling for Tide or something, you know. I could totally see that happening at some point when he's like 70 or something, you know. Anyways, how about your favorite moment?
All of December 4th.
Ah.
All of December 4th. It's so regal and grand and sweeping. I feel like the beginning sounds like something you'd hear at a coronation.
It's just a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
There is a level of grandeur that Just Blaze's production adds.
Yes.
And
great way to put it.
If you could please, Christian, play a little bit about him talking about his own nuances, the nuances of his production style.
For me, I think the one thing that's a constant is probably energy. Most of my stuff, as people who know my music know, is not very laid back. There's always some kind of energy there. Sometimes it's really loud, boisterous energy. Sometimes it's a very subtle thing, but there's just always an underlying energy that comes about. Usually as a result of my drum programming, or whether it's live drumming or drum programming, a combination of that with the syncopation with the horns and the bass, there's always, not always, but a lot of times there's an element of like loud or boisterous horns, a driving guitar, sometimes wailing vocals, sometimes, it's always different, but there's always just an underlying powerful energy there. People always tell me they like to work out to my music, you know, so that kind of makes sense.
So yeah, we know that he's about his horns, we know he's about that wailing, we know he's about that drum pattern, those chunky drums, as we say. And I do like Jay-Z's mother talking about, you know, opening up, talking about him being the last of our four children, the only one that didn't give her pain coming in. It was the beginning of me starting to see the significance in his life and his career around the number four, 444, four. Beyonce's born on September 4th, you know. That's December 4th is his birthday. So I just love everything about that track. That's my favorite moment, the whole thing, that whole track.
But I noticed the change in him when me and my husband broke up.
Now all the teachers couldn't reach me and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pop not seeing me. So with that disdain in my membrane, got on my pimp game, fucked the world, my defense came.
If not for PSA, I think December 4th would have been my other choice for Firetrack, and for all the reasons that you state. And I think the word grandeur is perfect because it has that the grandiosity. And I also, and I think we talked about this maybe in our episode about Gangstar's Hard to Earn and the song The Planet, is that I love a good hip hop autobiographical song where they're talking about in ways that display at least a little bit of humility and realness in terms of just how I grew up. And this is where things started. And December 4th, I don't think it's as good as necessarily as it's not quite on the same level as The Planet. Maybe it's somewhere in the same ballpark as KRS-One with Out of Here, which is also an autobiographical track. But I mean, the first time I heard this, I'm like, this is so great. And to go back to a point I was making earlier, it's such a great way to also open the album too, right? It just kind of puts you into this zone of, this is Jay. I don't know if bearing his soul is quite the right way to put it, but
yeah,
there is something, yeah, it's a little bit confessional in a particular way too, but it's, or I better said, it's sharing something very personal about him that doesn't feel as brand conscious as a lot of his other songs are. Like, you know, and it's probably naive to think we're getting like some kind of authentic Jay here that's any more or less authentic than any other song that you can pick. But nonetheless, I think just giving us this kind of walk through his life and childhood, it meant something, especially as a fan of his when I first heard this.
Yeah, same. And it is one of two of my favorite biographical tracks. It's this one, and it's Biggie's Sky's the Limit. From Life After Death, and him talking about his come up.
Ain't no telling where the spelling is heading, just in case. Keep a shell at the tip of your melon, clear the space. Your brain was a terrible thing to waste. 88 on gates, snatching issue nameplates, smoking splits with niggas. Real life, begin to kill us. Praying God forgive us for being sinners. Help us out.
How about sleeper jams? I actually was not able to come up with one. And this was, it's funny because this was not planned, but I had a hard time coming up with a sleeper jam for Reasonable Doubt. And I have an even harder time coming up with one for myself on this album, because There's no song on here that I have reevaluated over time. The songs I love, I still love. The songs that I could kind of care less for, I still don't really care much for. And so there's no song that kind of was able to rise up over the course of time and pop up for me. How about you, Morgan? Do you have a sleeper jam?
I struggled like you did. I struggled because I felt like there shouldn't be anything that's being slept on. I didn't sleep on anything. Like what I bumped, I bumped. But the one that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is Lucifer. And I don't know why, because yeah. Lucifer's fire.
Yeah. Lucifer, dawn of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth. Lucifer, Lucifer, dawn of the morning.
I'm from the murder capital, where we murder for capital.
Lucifer, Lucifer, dawn of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth.
I love that. I'm from the murder capital, murder for capital. Love that. It appeals to, he's saying all the right things. He's talking about getting his soul right. He's dropping that Matthew 5 and 5, the meek shall inherit the earth. He's talking about beating the son of the morning, which is another word for the devil. So it's got those churchy elements that I need, except for that murder thing. But everything else is sort of spiritual, and I just love the flip of the sample. And I don't hear people talk about that one, and I don't hear that getting played a lot. So it feels like a sleeper jam.
Yeah. I thought with this album, one of the questions that we should definitely get into is the favorite remix. And that's because, not that anyone I think would have forgotten this, but I mean, this is an album that launched, you know, 1,000 remix mixtapes, because for whatever reason, and I should have looked up the history behind the strategic decision to do this, is that they released the entire album in a cappella form, which was something I can't say with 100% certainty that that was unprecedented for a hip hop album. I certainly don't remember any example, least of all at this stature, in which they were like, here, everyone, have the whole album just a cappella and then run with it. And so you saw all of these incredible remixes come out. I mean, I'll start off here. And if we're talking about a single remix, for me, it is Just Blaze's remix of Moment of Clarity. And just to be clear, I mean, there are a lot of different people who did remixes of songs off of here. I, by coincidence, happen to be choosing one done by a producer who actually worked on the album, which is Just. But nonetheless, like Just Blaze's remix of Moment of Clarity, and this appeared on the S. Carter, the remix mixtape that Jay-Z and Reebok had put out to help sell the S. Carter line of Reebok shoes. And if I didn't say this earlier, one of my least favorite songs on this LP, and mostly... actually, not even mostly, exclusively because I hated the production on the original, was Moment of Clarity. And this is not a shot at Eminem. I just never, ever, still don't like the production on the album version of Moment of Clarity. And what made me actually listen to the song finally and soak in the lyrics is because this horn-heavy remix that Just Blaze did finally made this song listenable to me.
Way beyond the reason, I can't feel my shoes. Blueprint beginning to that black album ending. Listen close, you hear what I'm about. Nigga, feel my truth. Hop died, didn't cry, didn't know him that well. Between him doing heroin and me doing crack sales. With that in the eggshell.
I also want to acknowledge, though, for any super underground fans of Fondalum Records from the 90s, that horn loop that Just Blaze uses is nearly identical to the same loop is used by J Treads. On a single that came out a few years before that. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, Jess was, I'm sure, listening to a lot of the hip hop that was circulating around New York at the time, regardless if it was on a major or an indie. So I'm guessing this was sort of an homage to that J Treads track, which was called Praise Do.
I ain't ready for this. 1, 2, it's J Treads. Make way, cause here I come to set it.
And since we're in the Just Blaze bag, I have to talk about, I mean, he's prolific production wise, but his remixes are as well. And one of my favorites of his is his redo of Faith Evans' Burning Up from her album Faithfully. The original was good. I mean, I bumped that. It was from the Neptunes and it features Loon and it sounds like this.
Sometimes you can be in love and having fun, but still not know what's going on.
But then Just Blaze comes in and does this to it.
Come on. Hey, yo, Faith. favor. Let me set this one on. Check this out.
I'm on fire.
Baby, what's your name? Thick bitch jeans and I love the frame.
Like that.
Better move your thing. Bounce like that, girl.
You get those horns. You get those drums. That is it. He just does something different. Not taking anything away from the Neptunes, but you just get all those things that I talk about that Just Blaze is able to do, that seasoning, that extra seasoning.
Morgan, since you led us down this road of favorite Just Blaze remixes, I was thinking like what pops to my mind. The one that immediately comes to mind, and I'd have to study his discography deeper to see if there's one that I would put in front of this, but it is Just Blaze's remix of PSA, which, you know, was a song he produced, so he's remixing himself. This is also featured on that S. Carter, the remix tape. And what makes this so great, I mean, you know, PSA, the original version, as I said, that's my fire track off of the Black Album. But on this remix, I mean, it would be impossible to imagine a track as great as what he did the first time around, but the remix joint is using this Jackson 5 loop that I think I had first heard like years before on a Public Enemy song, and somehow just manages to capture the same energy that he did with the original version of PSA on this remix. And, you know, Jay also flips some of the lyrics too. So it's a true remix on both ends, both lyrically and production wise. And it's like, I didn't know how just managed to do it twice on the same song, except that he's just fucking Blaze. And like, why would we ever doubt his ability to do that?
So I come through the block and anything that's fly. That's why real niggas respect me. Fake niggas want beef, cause they know that's the only way we ever gonna speak.
And what I love about that is it's from a Jackson 5 song, but it's the Jackson 5 covering Isaac Hayes, covering Dionne Warwick. So there's like many, many layers happening with that particular sonic history right there. Yeah. Morgan, before we close out our take two discussion here about Jay-Z, I'm wondering, where do you think Jay-Z fits into music in 2020? This is not meant to be a diss at all, but I feel like if we, as much as I enjoyed 444, if we never got another Jay-Z album, I think I would be okay with that, because I don't know, and this is something that you were pointing out multiple times during the last two sessions, he's got nothing left to prove to us lyrically, musically, whatever. And so, rather than sort of be disappointed by a next effort, I'm fine with just letting the catalog stand as it is. And again, if we never got another Jay-Z album, I don't think I would feel that disappointed by it. How about you?
Agreed. I think that he fits right into 2020. He's famous. He's rich. He's got a gazillion followers. He's a star. He's a part of a star couple. And I think he fits into 2020 in the ways that, I think there's a tendency of, I'll put it this way, on social media, there's always this late discovery. Somebody yesterday tweeted about, they said Generation X, Gen X explained this. And whoever this was had just discovered Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time. They hadn't heard it. And apparently they weren't really that familiar with Rick James. And so they had to go back into all these things that Eddie Murphy had done. And I think why Jay-Z fits into 2020 is he's got a whole discography behind him that while he doesn't need to release anything else, he's got enough material that if people are interested in who he was before you heard of him, he's got enough for you. There's nothing else he needs to do. He's a philanthropist. He's a businessman. He's got bars and he's still alive. After a 25-year career in hip-hop, I think he fits absolutely in 2020, period. The only thing he could do after this is run for president.
So, Morgan, if you had to describe the Black Album in three words, what would you choose?
Watch the throne.
Playing with me, and no, I ain't get shot up a whole bunch of times. Or make up shit in a whole bunch of lines. And I ain't animated like, say, a Busta Rhyme. But the real shit you get when you bust down my lines. Add that to the fact I went plat a bunch of times. Times that by my influence on pop culture. I supposed to be number one on everybody's list. We'll see what happens when I no longer exist.
Well, as always, we want to leave our audience with something else to step to in terms of you really enjoyed the Black Album, something else that you might want to check out. So I had mentioned earlier about some of the S. Dot Carter mixtapes that Jay had done in collaboration with Reebok. The remix I mentioned earlier, Moment of Clarity, as well as the PSA remix, those both appeared on the, it was actually just called The Remix. But the other project, which is, I think, better known that came out of that collaboration, was entitled the S. Dot Carter Collection, which dropped before the Black Album. Jay actually talks about, you know, check out the Black Album when it comes out later. And I remember that S. Dot Carter Collection mixtape being huge, especially because Jay does a freestyle over Joe Button's Pump It Up beat.
Ooh.
And it is so fun to hear Jay just effortlessly killing shit on a mixtape.
J.R. Ryder, washed up on marijuana. Even worse, you a pervis Ellis. You worthless fella, you ain't no athlete. You Sean Bradley, I ain't talking to nobody in particular. My flow just vehicular. Homicide when I'm picking up dust. Anybody in my path is a car crash waiting to happen. Nigga, what? I got my foot on the toes, on the pulse of this rap game, and I ain't let.
Morgan, how about you?
You mentioned this earlier, but if you like this album, go back to the acapellas of this album, mm-hmm. and you can find those on mm-hmm. Spotify. I think you'll appreciate all the praise that we're heaping on the production once you hear what Blaze and Kanye and the Neptunes and Timbaland brought to this album. And you'll get to hear Jay-Z's bars. So if you're sleeping on his flow, go back to these acapellas, and you can hear all he does with his wordplay, and then you'll appreciate all the production that added it.
Check out my swag, yo, I walk like a ball player. No matter where you go, you are what you are, player. And you can try to change, but that's just the top layer. Man, you was who you was before you got here. Only God can judge me, so I'm gone. Either love me or leave me alone.
Well, that will do it for this Take Two Focus about Jehovah. We have a couple of other Take Twos coming up. I think Morgan and I have teased the fact that we plan on doing one about Drake, because Drizzy is the great uniter for bringing her and I together all those years ago. And we might have another fourth one in the mix, but I don't want to preview that one just yet until we are for sure going to do it. But I think if it does happen, our fans are going to really, really like it. So, Morgan, as always, a pleasure. I'm really enjoying these Take Twos. I mean, as much as I love having a guest, it's really fun just to, you know, be one-on-one with you talking about this stuff.
I feel the same way. It's sort of certainly has a nostalgia factor, taking us back to how we started. And I'm just glad that the artists that we're discussing have a catalog long enough to go to compare two great albums. And I'd also say, for any of the listeners, if you have some suggestions to albums that you'd like us to take on, reach out to us on social media and let us know. If there's two albums that you feel like we need to tackle, please let us know and we will.
Hey, Heat Rockers. Apologies from us. Because of just the general chaos of adjusting to recording under lockdown conditions, we've sort of let some things wither on the vine, and that includes thanking all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers, and you all have showed up in droves over the last couple of months, so I wanted to just catch up and thank a few folks out there. From Fewer Bayonets, I can agree with that sentiment. They write that, quote, "You get to eavesdrop on some of the best conversations about music," unquote. So thank you, Fewer Bayonets, for that kind remark. We have from Antonio Argenis, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They had recently discovered the podcast after binging Dear White People and, quote, "absolutely needed to know who did the music," unquote. And that probably led you to discover Morgan and therefore discover our podcast. So thank you for leaving a review for us. From Case Sloan, quote, "I just found the show last night and can't stop, won't stop listening," unquote. Well, that's great. Please don't stop, because we enjoy having you as our listener. From Not Woolsey. That right? Not Wools. Yes, not Woolsley. Woolsley, not Woolsley. Quote, "One of my favorite podcasts ever. Morgan and Oliver are charismatic, incredibly well-versed in music, and ask thoughtful questions that prompt passionate discussions with charming guests," unquote. Well, that's a very charming comment. Thank you so much for that. We have from Antonio M., quote, "A brilliant and funny show with the coolest hosts. I love the depth and breadth in which they talk about music and culture," unquote. And thank you so much for that comment. We really appreciate you thinking that we're cool. I'm a Wilkes. It's just an emoji of the devil horn emoji hand, and, you know, rock on, I guess. That's great. I like the terseness of that. from Carly Hoff. Quote, Morgan and Oliver are brilliant minds and true music lovers. I learned something new from every episode, unquote. Thank you for that. We hope that we can have people come away with learning something new. I mean, I always learn something new when we sit down to prep for these things. From Michael Stripe, he writes that, quote, I love this album, Velvet Rope. This has been my favorite drop from you all, unquote. Talking about the Take Two series that we did around Janet Jackson's episodes. We had so much fun doing it. I'm glad you liked it as well. From Play Work Sync, they describe the podcast as, quote, classy, relaxed, informed discussion of the great albums of recorded music. I learn tons and get introduced to tons of new jams, unquote. And as I said a moment ago, so do we. This has been such a wonderful learning process for me as a music writer and lover. And we have from MT Harris 78, who describes this as the best music podcast. Quote, the dynamic between Morgan and Oliver, the depth of information provided on the subject, plus recommendations based on said subject are so helpful and enjoyable to listen to, unquote. Thank you so much for that. I think that covers everything. This goes all the way back to, I think, May. So we are a little bit behind. Again, apologies for that. And we'll try to remember to make sure to thank you all our new reviews that come in every week. If you, dear listener, have not had a chance yet to leave us a review on iTunes, we would so appreciate it because it's how new people can find their way to our little podcast. So with that, thank you to everyone who has been leaving us reviews over the last few months. And we will see you all next time. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.